You're listening to the Boogeyman's Closet podcast. Explicit language and spoilers ahead. You've been warned. And we are back for yet another episode of the Boogeyman's Closet. As always, I am Mike Alvarez.
Maurice Gilliver.
Susie Hunt.
And we are here to end our haunted house movies with episode 116.
Hell House LLC!
What she said. It's from 2015. It's an hour and 33 minutes, directed by Stephen Cognetti. Really, the only other things of note that he did were Hell House 2 and 3. So he did the entire trilogy.
Let's go around the table.
And Susie, we'll start with you to see what your thoughts are, because I know you've been waiting for this one. So what do you think?
Oh, I really like this movie. Really, really like this movie. I am not really a fan of the found footage, first person shooting, just because the POV gives my head the not goods.
Yeah.
But there was really only a couple instances, like the YouTube found footage and then the recovered footage, you know, when they're down in the basement and the girl is like chained up and screaming like, "Joey, save me, man." Those were really the only two parts that kind of had me like, eh. But for the most part, I think it's really well done.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it really does tell the story well. And having seen the trilogy in its entirety, it really does set it up for parts 2 and 3 very, very well.
Yeah.
The whole Sarah thing, super fucking creepy. I'm in room 2C. It's just, it's a really good story. If any of our listeners don't know, I'm really fucking afraid of clowns. And this fucking clown really scares the shit out of me. And I think that it's really done in a very good way.
Yeah.
Where, dude, are you fucking with me? Are you fucking with me? You're fucking with me, right? You're fucking with me. You're fucking with me. It's just, it's so creepy. It's done so well. And that's all I have to say about that right now.
Well, Maurice, we'll toss it over to you. What are your thoughts on this one?
Well, I'm going to be the Debbie Downer of the group.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
And I don't think it's that good at all.
Really?
Oh, all right, cut his mic out.
I give it credit. When it first starts, it's fine. But then it gets too unrealistic, and that just took me out of the movie.
It's a haunted house thing. How is it?
But they want you as a viewer to believe that this is a real documentary.
Yeah, it's totally mockumentary style.
And it's fine in the beginning with the minor things happening, but once all this, it just gets really bizarre, and it took me out of it.
All right, just shut his mic off, Mike.
I thought the people who ran it were a bunch of jackasses.
Alex is a jackass. I'll give you that.
He's a
turd. Oh, they all are. They all are. And the guy is fucking rapey.
Oh, yeah. Paul. Paul's gross.
Oh, yeah. Paul? Yes. Yeah. No, he's definitely rapey.
I mean,
can I see your boobies? Can I touch your boobies?
No, he doesn't even ask her. Like, he's saying to his guys, is there any way we can get her topless?
Yeah, he's trying to force them to make her be topless in the haunt.
But Paul was creepy. Yeah, he was very creepy. I think if they would have just stayed with the minor things happening, or even a little bit more believable than not, like, a ghost cannot possess a mannequin and make it move from one area to another. It's just, this doesn't happen. The clown was scary.
That you know of.
But yeah, overall, I don't really care for it. I've watched it a couple times now, and it's just not my cup of tea.
That's fair.
I mean, I respect that.
I
honestly thought the first Paranormal Activity was more scarier.
Oh, okay. Now them are fighting words.
Oh, all right. Definitely mute his mic, please.
Facts are facts.
Now, see, I have to split the difference. I am definitely a fan. I enjoy all three of them. But there are a lot of moments in this, especially watching it critically, that take me out of the film. But unfortunately, I can't fault the film for that. This is just a staple of this type of genre, where they're always looking for a reason to continue filming that in real life, no one would keep filming in this situation. And, like, you see that in every found footage movie. So I can't fault the film. It's just the style of filmmaking, and it irks me every time in every found footage movie. But there's several times in this where I'm like, why would you be filming that? What about this would make you set the camera down and film this intimate moment? You know, like, there's just a lot of stuff like that that bugged me.
Well, that's a lot of stuff that was bugging me. It's like, why are you even recording right now?
Right. But see, like I said, I can't fault the film itself, because that's, you see that in Cloverfield, you see that in The Blair Witch, you see that in Paranormal Activity. Like, you see it in every one of these found footage movies. Hell, even Diary of the Dead. But I think Diary of the Dead. Oh, good.
I was going to say, just look at the end.
Right.
How the fuck did we get that footage when they both died in the...
Exactly. I have a little note about that at the end there, but I think Diary of the Dead did it best, because they basically winked at the camera. They right in the start of the film, they tell us, like, the girl who put together the footage, she edited it for effect. She even said, she's like, I edited the film for effect. You know, I added sound, I cut the clips together, you know, so when it supposedly goes from mockumentary to, like, actual film, you're supposed to believe, oh, it's because she's a film student and she was putting this together to be more cinematic. So even though it's like, you know, yeah, okay, it's a bunch of bullshit, we can at least buy it more with that film. But all of these found footage movies are guilty of it.
Oh, yeah.
But I will say, that being said, I enjoy the story of this quite a lot. And it's one of the few found footage movies that actually gives me the willies. Like, I'm with Susie. The clown is fucking creepy as crap. Like, there are more than a few scenes where it makes me jump every time. But the scene with Paul and the ghost in his room, that wigs me out. Like, that really scares me. Like, legitimately scares me. Because I watched it again last night just as a refresher. Because I watched this earlier in the week and made my notes. So I watched it again as a refresher and was kind of drawing while I was watching. And I got to that scene, and it's the middle of the night. I'm the only one awake. I was definitely spooked. And then I went to bed after Jess and Caleb got up and, you know, left for work and school. And I'm laying in bed by myself, and it's all dark in my room, and I can't get that image out of my head. So I was having a really hard time falling asleep because I kept thinking about it. So kudos to the filmmakers, because that stuck with me. So overall, I am a fan, but like I said, there's a lot that, much like Maurice, it takes me out of the film, which always loses points for me. But let's go through the cast. There's a lot of people, but they haven't been in a lot of things. So we have Paul O'Keefe, played by Gore Abrams. He was in Stuck on A, Hell House 3, The Vixens, and Mercy Mistress. Diane Graves, played by Alice, I'm going to say this wrong, Bahik, Americano, and Hell House 2. Alex Taylor, played by Danny Bellini, Les Lost, The Drifter, Hell House 2 and 3. Robert Lyons, played by Theodore Belokos, I'm sure I said that wrong, is in Hell House 3. And then I just put these, they're both shorts, but I love the titles. One is called New Boobs, and one is called Go Fuck Yourself, Oliver. That cracked me up. Then we have the hotel clerk, played by Natalie Gee. She was in Waves, Queendom, and All Is Not Lost. Tony Prescott, played by Jared Hacker, Hell House 3. Joey, played by Phil Hess. He was just in this. Sarah Havel, played by Ryan Jennifer Jones. She was in Friends and Romans, I'd Kill for You, Not Like Other Girls, and Hell House 3. Melissa, played by Lauren A. Kennedy. She's in Boardwalk Empire, Blackwell, Kelsey, Hell House 2, and Strangers in Paradise. Martin Cliver, played by Jeb Krieger. He's in Hack, Law and Order, Boardwalk Empire, The Outsiders, The Punisher, and For Life. Then Miranda Kelly, played by Miranda Robbins. She was in Southern Fried Homicide, Murder Amongst Friends, Last Place Trophy. And then finally, Andrew McNamara, played by Adam Scheider. He was in Dark Skies and Hell House 2 and 3. So like I said, a lot of people, but not really known for them.
No A-listers.
No.
Or no even B-listers.
Mm-hmm.
C or D.
I think a lot of
into E and F.
Honestly, I think a lot of these people were probably friends with the director.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, but hey, it was good enough to make two other movies for, so they did something right.
No Murder, She Wrote.
Yeah, no Murder, She Wrote connections. Well, last time we only had the skeleton.
That's true.
We do have an upcoming film, though, that there was a couple Murder, She Wrote connections. But yeah, so for anyone who hasn't seen this, the basic plot is 5 years after an unexplained malfunction causes the death of 15 tour goers and staff on the opening night of the Halloween Haunted House tour, Hell House LLC. A documentary crew travels back to the scene of the tragedy to find out what really happened. But do they, though? I don't think they do. So we open with a POV shot inside a moving car. We cut to a black screen that says, "What you're about to see is a documentary of the mysterious events surrounding the 2009 Halloween Haunted House tragedy." We see a woman, this is Diane Graves, walking up to the abandoned Abaddon Hotel. She's looking back at the camera. So since this is a found footage movie, we're going to get a lot of those looking back awkwardly at the camera moments, which is just one of the many things that always bugs me of these movies. So she begins poking around the property, and this is intercut with like confessional style interviews that are shot by Diane, where she's asking different people about what they think happened that night at the Abaddon Hotel. No one, of course, is able to explain it. So we cut between the interviews and the news report talking about how tragedy struck at the Halloween Haunted House in Abaddon. Multiple people are dead. The police refuse to answer any questions. They explain here that the abandoned Abaddon Hotel was turned into a haunted house and was set to have tours throughout Halloween. So we kind of get a little bit of a backstory jumble all at once. We get another black screen. It says, "On October 8th, 2009, a Halloween haunted house opens its doors in Abaddon, New York, a small town just outside New York City in Rockland County." We see more news reports with confused patrons, of the haunted house. Some of them are injured and being treated by paramedics. No one seems to know exactly what the hell happened in there. What the hell happened in Hell House?
Hell breaks loose.
In hell. So we go back to Diane poking around the Abaddon Hotel. Can't get in yet. Well, that's coming up later. So we go back to the interviews, and now we meet Robert Lyons. He says, "Whenever people ask me about what happened in Hell House, I tell them to watch the video, and then you tell me." So we get another black screen, and it says a video shot by a tour goer was uploaded to YouTube. Now we get
shaky
our first...
Shaky cam.
I wrote here, sorry, Susie, we get this long shaky cam footage.
It's fine.
It is annoying, though, like, because it's almost like they were doing shaky cam for effect. Like, oh, this is home movie, so we have to be shaky. Like, where the rest of the movie wasn't shaky.
And she's like, oh, how long is it going to be until we get in? Oh, we're in. Oh, why is that supposed to happen? Because you see Sarah, like, running up and then going through
a door. Them. Yeah.
Yeah. That is not for the people that paid to be there.
Yeah. Clearly some behind the scenes shit. And then we get another black screen that's like, it captured the scene inside as the chaos broke out. And then we cut back to all the patrons like in a traffic jam at the basement stairs. People are screaming and panicking, trying to get out. Then the group that we're following runs through the haunt, trying to get out. People are screaming, props are falling. Things have clearly gone very wrong inside of Hell House. They get outside and see the paramedics and firemen arriving on the scene, corralling people together away from the building. Now we cut to news footage of the bodies being brought out of the haunt. Back to the interviews where one woman says that no one knew what to make of the YouTube video. And then the 911 call leaked, and that confused people even more. So now we cut to another black screen. It says 911 call from the Abaddon Hotel the night of the incident. We hear a woman say, "I'm at the old Abaddon Hotel. Can you please send the police?" The officer or the dispatch operator says, "What's the problem, miss?" She goes, "I don't know. There's something." And then it cuts to static, and you hear like weird growling and hissing. And she says, "Is someone hurt? I'm sorry, I can't hear you." She says, "Please hurry, I don't want to die." And then we hear more of the growling in the background. They were just playing dad jeans. I mean, come on.
I bought a grill on clearance at Sears.
Well, I mean, it was on clearance. How could you not? But we cut back to Diane reporting on the situation, saying the cause of death is now being blamed on a severe malfunction. What exactly malfunctioned isn't clear, and the authorities aren't saying. So now we get more interviews, this time with Martin Cliver. We find out that he got inside of Hell House and got a bunch of photos and posted them online. So,
ooh, all the blood on the walls. Blood on the walls!
And that the creepy one to me is the body drag blood smear. Like, you see that just dried blood on the wood floor where you can tell a body
in
was
the
dragged.
Bar. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, it was spooky. But
And then at the end when we actually see what caused it.
Ooh. Yeah. Oh, again, see, those are the parts that made me like, I got the hair stand up on the back of my neck where I'm like, oh, that's freaking eerie.
You see what causes the blood, mm-hmm. the blood drag, patch smear. And then you see what happens after, because we hear at the very beginning, like in the news footage, they found one of the Hell House like people.
Yes.
Who was dead with their throat slit in an apparent like self-inflicted wound, but mm-hmm. you don't know who it is. And then at the very end, we know who it is.
Oh, and that just, I've said this before on the show. For some reason, throat slashing is right up there for like with eyeball trauma for me. Like, it just freaks me out.
Mm. Eyeball trauma, throat slashing, and fingernails.
Yep. Oh,
top three. Top three.
Totally agree. I know this is not even on the Patreon, but we had a little discussion about Halloween Kills prior to the episode for the listeners. Prior to the episode, and we discussed, you know, our feelings on it. We don't want to ruin anything for anyone who hasn't seen it. However, there's plenty of eye trauma.
Oh, yes, there is.
And there were at least several moments where I recoiled in horror because of said eye trauma. So look forward to that. But yeah, so we see all the photos of the effed up, you know, haunt after it was shut down. So Martin Cliver talks about how he got to the basement and he looked down.
But he
wouldn't
go down the stairs.
And he said, he goes, "I've been in a lot of scary places in my career." He goes, "But something was telling me to stay out of there." So he took a bunch of photos of the stairwell, and you see like a bloody handprint on the stair. I was like, okay, that's creepy. I don't like that. And then we get another black screen that says, Sarah Havel, a member of Hell House, reached out to documentarian Diana Graves. Or Diane Graves. God, I don't know why I wrote Diana. But reached out to documentarian Diane Graves. And she agreed to an interview at a hotel near Abaddon. So they're not quite at the Abaddon Hotel. Then we cut to Diane interviewing Sarah.
Spooky.
And we find out that she was on the Hell House team since its inception. And she was there for everything. Sarah tells her that due to the secretive nature of the events, it's caused a lot of speculation and conspiracy as to what happened. Sarah tells Diane that that's a good thing because if people were to know what really happened, they wouldn't be able to handle it. Diane asks her what that means, and she takes her back to the beginning. So, dun-dun-dun, rewind.
And then she says, "Where have you been?" And she says, "I've been mostly staying with family."
Mm-hmm.
And says, I quote, "I'm in a better place now." Dun, yep. Dun, dun.
And that's where she hands over the bag. There's a black bag with a bunch of videotapes in it. And Diane tells her that everything was taped, mostly by Paul and Tony and a few tour goers, which, again, how did she get that footage? But whatever.
She got it before the cops did.
Right. But yeah. How did she get the tour goers footage? I'm not going to ask questions.
She got it before that, you see?
But yeah, that's where she says, how did you get this? Or how did the police not have this? And she said, I got there before them.
You see?
Like that.
The motherfuckers.
She turned into a 1940s gangster.
Yeah.
Then she asks, why didn't you give them to the police? And Sarah ominously tells her, you'll see. It's like, oh, that's not creepy at all.
Right?
So Diane's assistant, Mitchell, takes the tapes, and Diane tells Sarah that he's going to start going through them while they talk. So she then asks Sarah if she's watched the tapes, and she says no. Diane comments, then you have no idea what's on them, and she simply says, Hell House. So we get a black screen, the Hell House footage, August 23rd, on October 8th, 2009. We cut in on Sarah in the back of a car being filmed by Paul and playing a Name That Movie game. It says August 23rd, 46 days until opening night. Now we get a little montage here of group interactions. You know, they're arguing about directions, bitching about being hungry and needing to pee, you know, being lost out in nowhere. And they finally end up at the hotel in Abaddon and begin poking around. Most of them are excited, except Andrew, who I keep writing Andrew because that's his character name, but they call him Mac. So I'm going to have to try to correct myself as.
Yeah, and I've seen this movie like 5 times. And I know that you mentioned, Mike, like it was either me or your sister who told you to watch this movie. Mm-hmm. I really think it was Sabrina because I watched this movie for the first time like a year ago.
Oh, OK. Yeah, then it had to
so
be.
So I think it was Sabrina.
Yeah, because I just remember. Like I said, I couldn't remember who it was, but somebody was like, you got to watch this. You'll dig it. And I was like, yeah.
It was definitely then, Sabrina.
Then went back and watched 2 and 3.
Yep.
So they're poking around the hotel. And Mac is kind of bitching about, you know, the fact that they need to get electricity in there. And he's not even sure if they can. He's like, you know, I thought run down. I didn't think totally frickin' abandoned. And Alex excitedly tells him, well, that's your part. You got to get the electricity running. And Mac is skeptical, but, you know, the rest seemed, you know, pretty excited. And they look around at all of the free production value, all the cobwebs and broken furniture and whatnot. So we cut to Tony and Paul upstairs in the attic. And this is the first sign of something being slightly wrong. Their walkie-talkie is not working and is just odd static with what sounds like people talking, but it's like gibberish. And then finally it comes through and we hear Alex telling them to get their asses to the basement. So that this is the first example of this type of shit that drives me crazy in every found footage movie where they're like, why are they filming just wandering around talking? You know, just like, why are you carrying the camera right now? I understand filming the setup. Like, that makes sense. But you're just walking around chit-chatting. It doesn't make any damn sense. But whatever. That's going to happen all throughout. As they're walking downstairs, we're getting like random shots of different rooms. And the footage slows down and we see a hooded figure in one of the backgrounds of one of the rooms.
Oh, creepy.
That was pretty creepy.
It was. That.
Yeah, that's creepy and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Because you really don't know yet.
Yep. And then, so they head down in the basement, and the rest of the group is already down there. Sarah looks very disturbed, while Alex is very excited.
Because there's all kinds of Bibles.
All over the floor.
Strewn about.
And satanic symbols on the wall, and weird writing and numbers. Like, all sorts of weird shit scrawled on the wall. So Alex,
and then there's just some kind of clowns all over the place. So you have clowns, Bibles, satanic things all over the place. And I'm like, no, thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, they didn't put the clowns there yet. He's talking about they're going to put the clowns there because they're the ones that put the clowns in.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, he points at the pentagram on the wall and he goes, this is where we'll have the girl chained up. And he goes, and then we're going to have 3 clowns or as many clowns as we can fit right here kind of staring at her. And he goes, and then we'll have the tour goers go out through the storm base or the storm door basement. So it's like there's like a way out. So it's perfect way to funnel them through the house and or through the hotel and then out through the basement. So Sarah is questioning, you know, why are there Bibles everywhere? And they're like, why? What do we, hotels have Bibles? That's no big deal. She's like, but who put them there? He's like, ah, it's fine. Like, Alex is a dumbass. So they're all a little nervous, and he assures them, you know, hey, we've been through much worse setting these things up. And besides, half of our work is already done for us. So, you know, they all agree, like, yeah, this is cool. Let's, you know, let's go on with this. So now we cut back to Sarah and Diane in the interview. Diane asks her what it was like staying in the Abaddon Hotel. Sarah explains that it took them about a week to get the electricity going, and that's when they started staying overnight. When they began sleeping there, that's when things started to change. So we get another montage of the group in the hotel playing cards, drinking.
Changes.
We get the whole thing where they're talking about the Queen's Haunt, and Mac is like, remember the guy who played Lucifer? He's like, hey, welcome to Lucifer's cabin. Like that part cracked me up. So Alex gives this little speech to his crew about how much he believes in them and appreciates them. And he knows this is going to be the best year for their haunt. So, you know, huzzah and all that. Now we cut
but
to
they
them.
Can't get cameras in the basement.
That's I was going to say, we cut to them checking the security cameras and we find out that the basement is a blind spot. And Tony tells him that's the thick stone walls. It's hard to get a signal down there. Alex points out that they need eyes down there for the haunt, because especially if they're going to have a half naked girl down there, we don't want anyone getting rapey with her like Paul. And it's like,
and then it's when they get Joey.
Yeah. Right. He goes, well, why don't we hire some muscle? We'll sit him in with the clowns and he'll just keep an eye on things. And it's like done deal. So it's like, all right. So again, we see them setting up the haunt, and there's another comment here, why we're constantly filming, because Tony bitches at Paul. He's like, why don't you set that damn thing down and help? And he's like, no can do, compadre. Alex wants me to film everything. And I'm like, yeah, okay. So we cut to Paul lying in bed talking to the camera, and he tells us how, or it tells us that it's September 5th, 2009, and he does something I don't like. He's like, we're trace weeks into the creation of this owl house. Yeah. Don't do
that. I fucking hate that.
Yeah. Don't put in a random Spanish word to think you sound cool, because you don't.
Trace weeks. Oh, compadre.
Oh, it's annoying. But he goes on to say how lonely it is and that Sarah is the only chick in the house and Alex don't like sharing. I'm like, gross. You're gross. This guy is gross.
Paul is a fucking scumbag.
He really is.
He's a pig.
Yep.
Yep. And
while he's talking, we see someone walk into the room behind him. He goes on talking about how he had high hopes for this trip, thinking it would be grand sexual station. Like, why? Why did you think it would be grand sexual? You're with a bunch of guys and one girl. Like,
maybe he... You know what? We don't judge people in this podcast.
he might, maybe he really likes Tony. We don't know.
Or but, Mac.
But he's only bringing up Sarah, so. But yeah, he's...
Sarah is not, she's in a monogamous relationship.
Yes. And yeah, but Paul is gross. Anyway, you cut it.
He's a fucking asshole.
Yep. And he looks like he smells.
He does. Like, every time he turns on, like, the confessional, he's like, light on. He's like, I'm like, oh my God, your breath is awful.
You know, he's got like rancid breath and just like that, like, thin layer of filth over his whole body.
Yes. Oh, he's like, he's like sticky and like, if maintaining the population of the earth came down to like me procreating with Paul, I would gladly give it up. Like, I'm sorry, we're not having the earth is dead.
The planet belongs to the cats now.
Yep. Go ahead, Gracie. Valkyrie, go do your thing.
But then he goes on to say, he's like, the new actors arrive tomorrow. Hopefully one of them is boneable. And of course, I'll be documenting the whole thing as always. Like, oh, gross. Yeah. Gross. This dude's just gross.
He gets so rapey with that girl. Like, she's... Oh, we'll get into it. We'll get into it.
He then realizes he's not alone, and he turns around to see the person in the room. He calls out, thinking it's Sarah. He goes, Sarah, you cool? And he goes, what, are you sleepwalking? And the person wanders back out of the room. Paul turns to the camera and says, well, that was fucking weird, and shuts it down for the night. Like, he doesn't go to check on her. He's just like, good night.
And what's that stupid thing he says? Sleep sweet?
Oh, yeah, sleep sweet. That's like, why? Why is he saying that?
Sleep sweet. Yeah, hang ten, dude.
Paul is what just a fucker.
Paul is the worst. He deserves what he gets.
It's funny how in almost every one of these movies, we all kind of collectively hone in on one person who's just the worst. Even though this movie has several people who are assholes in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, he's a bigger asshole than Alex.
Yeah. Although Alex kind of brought them all to their death, so, you know. Potato patata.
All because he wanted to make that money.
Yep.
No. Paul is the tomato.
So we cut to the next morning and we get a POV shot going upstairs where we hear Sarah and Alex talking. We see their bedroom door is cracked open and Sarah is lying on the bed in her underwear. Paul, being the fucking creeper that he is, decides to film her ass for a bit before making his presence known. Sarah and Alex tell him to get the fuck out of there and he says, you're the one with your door cracked. You wanted me to see it. Like, again, gross. You're gross. This guy is just gross.
Then he keeps on panning over to her, and it's like, dude.
Yeah. Like, he's trying to film some spank material. Like, ugh, gross. But he tells Alex the actors arrived. He says, Joey, Melissa, and Sam. Alex gets dressed. We cut to Paul filming Alex and Andrew, or I'm going to keep saying Andrew, but Mac.
Mac.
Alex and Mac talking to the new hires
Return
outside.
Return of the Mac.
Big Mac.
See, and now you got me thinking of that that Burger King commercial with the Return of the Mac and Cheetos. Oh, God. But anyway, you know, he's filming them talking to the new hires outside. And then Paul creepily zooms in on Melissa because Paul is gross. So we cut to Martin Cliver talking to Diane. He tells her how he's able to find one police officer willing to talk about the incident, anonymously, of course. And he was one of the first responders to the scene. This is where we find out one of the bodies they found was one of the Hell House members. Not sure which one, but their throat had been cut by, and the wound looked self-inflicted. That's where we find that part out. Mm. Now we immediately cut from that sentiment to this happy montage of the Hell House gang playing a loving game of football with each other.
Like, it's, what the fuck?
Right, it was just so random. And then
two-hand touch.
We cut back to Cliver asking, what the hell happened in there? Your guess is as good as mine. He goes on to mention the strange case of Joey Scheffler, who made it out alive, but was in the basement when whatever happened. Cut to the group of new hires standing outside talking to Alex, freeze frame on Joey in the background holding the umbrella. Text on the screen reads, authorities tried to talk to Joey Scheffler in the wake of the tragedy, but he refused to talk about what he saw in the hotel. 9 days later, he was found dead in his bedroom. He had hanged himself.
And Joey was a big boy.
Yeah, so some strong rafters in that house.
Right?
says,
Sorry.
Oh. That's not, we're wrong. That's messed up.
So then we find out about Andrew Tully.
Well, first it says September 18th, 19 days until opening night. We get a POV shot of Paul walking into a room where Alex is talking to Melissa, who is nervous about being chained up in the basement. Alex assures her that no one will touch her and Joey will be down there all night making sure of that. She then asks Paul why he's filming everything, and he and Alex explain that it's for them. It helps them with the haunt for the next year and a little for their website. Then Paul comments, and I'm trying to catch a ghost, to which Melissa says, oh, you've heard the rumors about this place? Paul is very interested in this, and Alex tries to shut it down immediately, saying there's no rumors, this place was just closed for normal reasons, and that's it.
Normal reasons, though?
Well, he kept trying to come up with normal reasons. He's like, a pipe burst, it flooded, they didn't have any business.
But, normal reasons. We went out of business because we went bankrupt. There was a shotgun yesterday.
I want to see that on a business. Going out of business for normal reasons.
Right.
Oh, man. But Paul pushes Melissa to spill the beans, and she says that the owner supposedly hung himself there. Alex tries to play it off as nothing more than a rumor, and Melissa tells him that it's just a story she heard. Paul asks if the owner was into satanic rituals, citing that would explain the wall art in the basement. Melissa is surprised, thinking that that was done for the haunt, and Paul explains that it was there when they arrived. So Alex writes the entire thing off as nothing more than a rumor, and nothing that they should be worried about, and to just stop talking about it. So now, Paul, of course, being Paul, has to hit on Melissa a little bit before he leaves, and then he ends it with, wait, how old are you? I was like, dude, you're just, everything about you is skeevy.
He's so fucking gross. Also, we missed the part with Hector.
With Hector?
Hector is the mannequin that sits at the piano.
Oh, right. Yes.
So there's a little scene with Hector, and Paul is filming it because he's a fucking creep. And he's like, hey, this is my buddy Hector. And Paul plays, and this is a point in the movie and will be through the three movies. Do, 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 do. And he plays it on the piano and he's like, oh, hey, Hector, I didn't know you could play the piano.
Yeah, he plays the little ditty and, you know, very clearly Paul is the one playing, but later on, not so much.
Right. So this is an important part that comes into play later on in the movie that Paul now says, like, hey, Hector, hey, buddy, you're playing this little ditty for the ladies. And Hector isn't. It's Paul.
Yes.
FYI.
So now we cut back to Martin Cliver talking. He says, we'll never know what happened in that hotel, just like we'll never know how the Hell House crew came to put on their Halloween tour there 20 years later. Just like we'll never know exactly what happened to Andrew Tully. Now, we cut back and forth between Cliver and Robert Lyons being interviewed. Both of them are talking about Andrew Tully. Robert explains that Tully built the hotel in Abaddon because it's the name of the demon who guards the gateway to hell, in some biblical verses. People say that Tully was the head of some cult and considered himself to be some kind of latter-day Dante. Diane asks about the missing guests, and Cliver tells her that it was an 11-year-old girl and her mother. Their last known location was the Abaddon Hotel. And of course, the police questioned Tully, but he was able to produce records showing their departure, so his name was cleared. Still, though, due to the disappearance and word of mouth, business was killed for the hotel. And a few months later, Tully hanged himself in the dining room of the Abaddon Hotel. Now we get a police shot from 1989 where we see Andrew Tully hanging in the hotel dining room.
And that's fucking creepy.
Yeah, that was a really creepy shot. Like, it was a Polaroid. It looked authentic enough to be creepy, you know? But, so we cut to a POV shot in the basement of the hotel. It says September 21st, 16 days until opening. We see Tony and Alex setting up the creepy clowns, and Paul comments on how creepy these things are. And I was like, yeah, I agree. They're all fucking terrifying. And clowns generally don't freak me out that bad, but these are creepy.
No, I am afraid of clowns. And this whole movie, the clown thing, fucking freaked me the fuck out.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they were creepy. They decide to remove one clown dummy to make room for Joey to sit amidst them. Of course, Paul waxes on about how Melissa should be topless because, you know, Paul's a creeper. And they keep telling him no. So we cut to Paul filming himself in his bedroom once again. He looks half asleep and comments that he just heard a strange noise and is going to investigate, which is a horror movie no-no. Like, if you hear a strange noise, don't fucking go investigate.
At least by yourself.
Right. That's always going to end badly for you. Like, if you hear a strange noise, be like, let the ghost do what the ghosts are doing. Just mind your business.
Mind your business. No, but then he sees a clown and he thinks it's Tony.
Well, yeah, because he meets up with the other. No. That's coming up because he meets up with the other guys who were all woken up by the same noise, noting that it sounded like a scream. All except Alex, who claims that he woke up because the others woke him up. They write it off saying maybe it was the soundboard. And I'm like, oh, yeah, OK, because the clown is coming up a little later. So now we cut to the guys working on the haunt. We find out that there's a leaky roof. They talk about how they can set up the kitchen to be like a spooky kitchen. And then we get the Joey eyeball scene where Joey decides.
Like Joey's I can make my eyeball pop out.
And apparently the guy really does this. Like, that's a thing the actor can do.
Oh, and, no.
Yeah.
Gross. Get out of here.
So he, for the listeners who haven't seen this, basically he forces his eyeball out of socket and like holds it between his two fingers. And I'm like, no. Like, everything about that is wrong.
No. Go away, Joey.
Right. Like, I don't.
Go back to your kangaroo pouch.
Where didn't they say they found him at a kangaroo pouch? That just clicked. Oh, God. Totally caught me off guard with that one. Oh, I was like, didn't they find him at a gas station? And then in my head, it was just a kangaroo pouch.
Was he working there or just getting gas? Yes.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. But so now we get a montage of Paul walking through the rooms of the haunt, showing off the props. He sees Andrew and asks where Tony is, and he tells him, oh, he's around. So Paul goes through the rest of the house looking for him and eventually turns the corner and jumps back when he sees a creepy clown staring at the basement. He assumes it's Tony and tells him to let him know when he wants to get back to work down in the basement, and he pans the camera down the basement stairs. The clown says nothing, and he pans it back up, and the clown is looking at him. So he jumps. He's like, ah, freaking weirdo, and he walks away. Goes back into the room with Andrew, where he finds Tony talking to him and freaks out, wanting to know how he got there and, you know, got there so fast when he just saw him in the clown costume. So Paul goes running back to where he found the clown, and it's gone. He runs into the basement, turns on the lights, and he finds the clown sitting amongst the other clowns against the wall. He thinks it's Alex and runs over and shakes the clown, but we find out it's just a mannequin. So he runs back upstairs and yells at Tony for fucking with him. He says, not funny. I don't like it. It's not funny. So then we cut to the group watching the video that Paul took. They all think he's just freaking out. And then once they see what happens, they're like, wait, what the hell? So Andrew accuses Paul, or I'm going to keep calling him Andrew. Mac. This is Paul. Of doing it on purpose to fuck with them because he's always fucking with them. Alex accuses Paul and Tony to be in on it together.
And here's the part that bothered me.
Mm-hmm.
He recorded all that, so they would have seen him go back and move the mannequin.
Right.
The video is him seeing that and running to go find them.
Right.
So how the hell did he set that up?
Exactly. And there's the fucking timestamp, so it's like, what the hell, guys? Like, yeah, that's the kind of shit that was irksome throughout the movie. So now we cut to the group filming their commercial for the haunt. We get the whole, like, them playing with corpses on the park bench. And spooky Sarah staring at the Virgin Mary statue. I'm like, what? What the fuck?
That's like, so fucking weird. She's just like, Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee.
They never come back to it.
Nope.
Like
they don't, and that's weird.
Yeah, that's just a very strange. She says
the rosary, and then walks away.
And she looks all happy when she walks away. It's like, okay.
Yeah, well, after I say the rosary as Catholic, I'm happy.
You frolic.
I do. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee.
That almost went into Rob Zombie territory.
That's where I thought it was going.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Yeah.
Hail Mary, Lord. I can't do it.
Dad Jeans and Rob Zombie do a concert together. Oh, Lord.
And then...
Oh, loaded, loaded. So we cut back to the haunt. Paul is getting a camera rig attached to him, and he's gonna go like kind of on a walk. Okay. Something got her.
It's Dad Jeans.
But yeah, so he's getting the camera rig hooked up to him, so he's gonna kind of walk through the haunt. Tony goes back to the control room, cuts the lights, and then cues up the strobe lights. Between the flashes, we see an extra figure appear in the hallway amidst the props. Paul asks Tony, how many freaks do we have down here? And he tells him, 3. And he asks him, are you sure?
Oh, goes, yeah. This is so fucking creepy!
And that's the thing, between the flashes, we see the fourth figure disappear and reappear. And disappear and reappear. And as it's reappearing, it's looking at Paul. That was really freaky.
That part was creepy.
Oh, it scares me.
And then Paul freaks out, runs to get out of there, makes his way to Tony and vomits. And apparently that's real. The actor actually puked.
Yeah, I read that.
I was like, wow, all right. That's
well,
that's
creepy. Because it really is creepy.
Yeah. There are those actors out there, I should say people, but there's several actors that can just force themselves to vomit on cue. I've seen that in horror movie trivia before. I was like, that's disgusting.
Oh, I'm one of them.
I cannot vomit on cue. And I'm kind of glad. But
I make pukey when it's spooky.
What the fuck? Oh, that caught me off guard again. I make pukey when it's spooky. Oh, Lordy.
That's the first I've heard of that one.
And look, Susie's snorking. Oh. Lordy, Lordy.
Oh, look who's funny.
Oh, Lord. All righty. Okay. So where the hell were... All right, so he pukes.
I make pukey when it's spooky.
we then see still images of the strobe footage, and we see the extra figure in there. So pretty fucking creepy. Now, we cut to the group in the backyard of the hotel. Paul is trying to tell them that what they filmed, we can't dismiss this. It's on tape. Alex tries to wave it off, telling Paul to keep his voice down so none of the other actors hear him. And he's basically like, you're going to scare the other actors away right before opening. Alex tells him that it's in the best interest of the company that they're there to make money. And if he scares off the actors before they open, they're screwed. Paul gets pissed and storms off. Now we cut to Robert Lyons.
Thinking about himself because he's the company.
Yeah, he's the owner of the company. So
he's the company, so he's thinking of himself.
Right. Yeah, because Alex is a dick. So yeah. We cut to Robert Lyons talking about how Alex was determined not to let his company fail. You know, he created the company. He had them go to that hotel, and he was going to see it through. The others were just loyal to him. Now we cut to Paul waking up in the middle of the night again, and we get a POV shot of him running out into the hall, looking down the stairs, and this is where we see the creepy clown standing there. Mac Ooh. Wakes up and
no,
is pissed.
Thank you.
Mac wakes up and is pissed, thinking that Paul moved the clown and is fucking with him. Paul assures him that he's not messing with him. So Mac heads cautiously down and smacks the clown in the head, and we find out it's a mannequin.
A mannequin, idiot.
And he's pretty damn, he's like, what the hell? He goes, I guess I'll just move it back then. And he begins to drag it. Paul walks ahead of him and looks around. He doesn't see anyone in the rooms, in one of the rooms, he sees a shadowy figure standing at the end. They realize it's Sarah and they call out to her. She doesn't answer. She's just standing there in the dark, facing the wall, mumbling in an odd tongue. So
she's
Mac
speaking a foreign language.
She was like gobbledygook. She was speaking in weird stuff.
But she's like
exactly. So Mac sets the clown down and then walks over to her and touches her arm. She jolts awake, starts crying, and is completely fused on how she got there. They try to console her. Paul turns around and sees the clown is gone. So they go looking for the clown and can't find it. They end up in the dining room, the haunt, where all the props are messed up and, you know, the furniture is tilted over and all, basically how they have it set up. They go to leave. They hear the clock chime and they turn around and the dining room is put back together and the candles are lit. So something basically did a poltergeist on that house where they just set the entire room up. Mm-hmm. So they freak out, you know, and start running. And then they turn the corner and the clown is standing at the other end of the room blocking their path. They run past it and run upstairs. Cut to the next day, we see Alex consoling Sarah outside. Cut to Paul, like confessional style, talking to the camera again. And he says, 3 days until the opening of Hell House. Yippee. Everyone's a little stressed. I personally think we have no business here. Alex is more confident than ever, whereas Sarah, she just doesn't look good. And she usually does. That's all from me. And then he says that thing again, sleep sweet, and he shuts off the camera. Now, we cut to the middle of the night. Paul wakes up again. He clicks on the camera, and behind him, we see a bloody woman sitting against the wall. This fucking freaked me the hell out. So he goes to get up, turns, sees the woman, and shoots back under the covers. And like, just, ugh, yeah, this is giving me the creeps thinking about it. So he's hiding under the blanket. Like, we get the POV shot of him hiding under the blanket. He pulls the camera back and looks, and the woman looks right at him and begins to move. He goes back under the covers. Oh, good.
This part is creepy, but it's just like the whole hiding under the covers thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's there's that like childhood instinct of the covers will protect me, even though that's completely irrational.
Yeah, well.
No, that, but that is like, think about it. Like,
that got eliminated in your with room. The grudge.
Mm-hmm. Truth.
You're in your room. What's going to protect you? You throw the covers over your head and you pray for the best. And you're like, go away, please, 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 go away.
Exactly.
No, my fists going to their face.
Maurice just starts swinging.
Yep.
Your fists are not going no place.
Not with a ghost. Oh. But this creeps me out because he.
Bye, Paul.
He peers out from underneath and she's right there looking at him. The camera goes out. We hear Paul screaming.
She is like in his face. She's like, hey, bro, what's what?
I'm surprised he didn't hit her.
Yeah, being Paul, I mean, you know, that would have been in character.
No, because being Paul, he's faced with an actual woman and he's like, I don't know what to do.
Oh, yeah, good point. So now we cut to Tony picking up the camera, commenting, where the fuck are you, Paul? We cut to him walking downstairs with the rest of the group. Mac and Alex are pissed and bitching about him leaving 2 days before opening. Tony tells him,
but did anyone else see that there was blood on the wall?
I didn't even notice that.
Me either.
Because when Mac picks up the camera and he like walks around, there's blood on the wall. Like, just a little, like, sploosh, like, boop.
I did not notice that. Mm-hmm. I'll have to look again. But yeah, Tony tells them, you know, he wouldn't do that. He wouldn't leave 2 days before the haunt. Andrew reminds him of a time where he did exactly that once before. So Tony asks him if either of them have tried to call him yet, and they haven't. So he hands Alex his phone and tells him to try. Someone answers but says nothing. Alex says Paul, and then there's this loud electronic screech, and he drops the phone. Alex, pretty much. That sounded like a TIE fighter. Alex is
screeching.
Right. Alex is unamused and walks away. So now we cut to that night. We hear music coming from somewhere downstairs. The same little ditty that Paul was playing earlier.
Do, 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 do.
Exactly. So Tony and Andrew go to investigate, thinking it might be Paul. They tell Alex to stay with Sarah. I was like, why is Mac completely unfazed when they see the magically moving clown and the dining room trick? Why isn't he crapping in his pants? Like, he still thinks Paul's fucking with him. And I'm like, dude, you witnessed with Paul the clown moving on its own and the dining room magically setting itself up and lighting its candles within seconds. Why are you not freaked?
Because he is pooping his pants, but he doesn't want people to know.
Oh, he's secretive about it. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I just pooped my pants.
That's so, what happened.
Yeah, makes sense now.
Yeah, so he just doesn't want people to know.
They go into the room with the piano, and nothing but the dummy is sitting there. The music stops. They look around, you know, look past the dummy, trying to find Paul anywhere in the room hiding. And then as soon as they turn away from the piano, suddenly there's pounding on keys. They look back, and it's just the dummy. So suddenly they hear Paul scream and rush off to find him. They rush through the rest of the haunt and down into the basement, searching for him. And Mac comments that the storm door is locked, so there's no way to get out. They go around. They can't find anything in the basement. No Paul. And they see the three clowns and a whole lot of nothing else. Now, Mac looks down the hall by the storm door and checks an empty walk-in freezer. Tony turns around to look behind him, and all three clowns are now looking at him. He freaks out. They hide in the freezer for a moment. And Mac tries to, you know, Mac's basically trying to calm him down. Like, when Tony's like, the heads move, they're looking at us. He's like, you know, they can't even move. You told me their heads can't move. And he flips out of him. He's like, well, they fucking moved. He goes, okay, do you believe in ghosts? And he's like, yeah. He goes, well, I don't, so we're going to be fine. That cracked me up because I'm like, oh, because you don't believe in ghosts. We're all good then. Ghosts will be like, oh, shit, he don't believe in us. We're screwed.
Yep.
Oh, man.
I think they're going to try harder if you don't believe.
Right? So they go back out, and all three clown heads are back to normal. Tony is freaking out, but Mac is telling him it's clearly Paul fucking with them. They turn around, and bam, there's Paul sitting against the wall with his eyes closed. Mac flips on him, yelling at him for scaring them. Tony is happy to see him. Mac forces Paul's eyes open and storms off. Paul looks confused and not quite himself. Now we cut to Tony, Mac, and Alex in the basement. Tony is trying to convince them that they need to shut the haunt down. Like, this is enough. We need to close this. Alex asks why, and Tony points out that the clown's heads can't move, yet they moved. What the fuck is going on? Like, this is not okay. Alex tells him that the house scared him, which is good for the haunt. He's like, well, it scared you. That's a good sign. And then he goes, and Paul is back. Isn't that good? And Tony tells him, yeah, he's back, but he isn't. He hasn't said a fucking word since we found him. To which Mac pipes up and says that it makes him about as useless as he always is, which pisses off Tony even more.
Yeah, Mac's becoming a real dick towards the end here.
Yeah, he's, I mean, I know him and Alex are best friends, but he's like a little fucking toady at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And so Tony gets pissed. Alex gets super douchey with him, smiling and acting like he doesn't give a fuck. And Tony's like, you know what? Fuck it. I quit. And he leaves. So Mac chases after Tony, telling him to wait. He needs to listen to him. And if you still want to go after you hear what I have to say, that's fine. But at least hear me out. Now, this doesn't make any fucking sense to me. We cut to footage of Sarah in a field, and then footage of the hotel, and then to footage of Tony sitting in a field, just kind of little confessional style. And he's saying he can't leave. He has to stay. Mac sits down next to him and asks if he's okay. He tells him no, and he asks why isn't Alex telling us? Mac tells him he doesn't know. So we know here something happened, but we never find out what it is that Alex isn't telling him. So I'm like, this drove me crazy because it's completely left up in the air. Like, what was the company in trouble? Was the haunt going to close down if they didn't make enough money? Like, what was the deal? Why did Tony have to stay? Like, we never find out. We're never given a satisfactory answer, and that bugs the crap out of me. But whatever. Movie's got a movie, I guess. So we cut to Diane interviewing Sarah. She's asking her if on opening night, if there was anything technically wrong with the house, any of the gear or props malfunctioning. Sarah tells her no. And Diane asks her, to the best of her knowledge, were they ready for opening night? And Sarah tells her yes. So she then goes on to ask if Alex was of sound mind and or if there was anything wrong with, you know, the management side of things. Sarah tells her no, that Alex rallied the actors like he always did, that he told them that they were all going to be okay and they believed him. Now we cut to Diane interviewing one of the patrons of the haunt, asking what happened, and she tells her, there was one point looking back where a guy in a clown costume shot past me, and I thought, that's pretty lame. But she's like, now I kind of believe he was running from what was happening. She goes on to say that she got to the bottom of the basement steps and couldn't move. No one could, because everyone who was already in the basement was trying to get out. So we cut to Alex rallying his troops for the show. Melissa asks about Paul, noting that he hasn't been seen for a few days. Alex lies and tells her that he's fine. He's just a little under the weather, so we're going to go on without him. Alex is a complete shitheel. The actors, you know, they break and they go and get in costume. Tony apologizes to Alex for trying to quit before, and the two make up. Again, we don't know why, but whatever. So we cut to Tony going to wake up Paul, who doesn't move. And he's like, I'm sure he's fine. It's like, your friend is catatonic. Yeah, he's okay.
He'll be better in the morning.
So we cut to Alex and Mac admiring the long line of customers outside, and then down to Melissa chained up in the basement with Joey set up in the clown costume. Melissa asks Mac if something is wrong. He assures her everything is fine, and he puts the finishing touches on her costume by cutting her shirt wide open so we could see her underwear.
It's going to be a little cold.
Right. He's just like, here, let me tear your shirt open. Show off the brown panties. But tells her it's almost showtime, and then they leave. So now we see Alex and Tony in the control room. They're trying to get a hold of Mac, but his walkie is cutting out again. Nothing they can do, so Alex tells them to get into position. We cut to opening night of the haunt. We see repeat footage from the beginning of the YouTube footage, intercut with Alex and Tony in the control room, and Andrew's footage. So it's kind of like bouncing back and forth between stuff we've already seen and new shots. We see Sarah get into Mac's hiding spot, and she tells him that she thinks she just saw Paul. She tells him that he seemed out of it. We then see Joey run by, and Mac tries to get him to stop, but he doesn't listen and just continues to run. Mac tries to call Alex in the control room explaining what's happening, but of course his walkie doesn't work. So in the control room, we see Joey run out of the basement, and they're freaking out trying to figure out what the hell is happening. We hear lots of screaming. Mac tells Sarah to run to the control room and find out what's going on. Now we see the scene of her running past the patrons from earlier and up the stairs. So now we're kind of piecing together the parts of what happened from that YouTube footage. We cut down to the basement and we see a cloaked figure standing in the corner. Melissa is screaming and begging for help, telling everyone this isn't part of the show and to please help her. This is where we see Joey, we finally see Joey get up and book it out of there. And she's like, don't leave me, Joey. And he's like, fuck this. And he just runs out. And we see another cloaked figure appear in the basement, then shaky cam footage. And none of the people are able to get out through the storm door. The cloaked figures looking at the crowd. We see people screaming, trying to get out. More shaky cam and distorted footage from, including random close-ups of a demonic face.
This shaky camera, I couldn't make out what the hell was going on.
Yeah, that was getting annoying.
Like I had no idea what was going on. All I just saw was people like running and.
Yeah,
I don't know. It was hard to pinpoint anything. Like if you were trying to look for like a ghost.
Right.
You know,
it's hard as hell to see what the hell was going on, you know?
Right.
But yeah, so that's the spoopy footage. And we see Mac come out of his hiding spot and meet with Tony. He tells him they have to get to the basement and Tony follows him. So they run through the dining room. Once again, it's put together. And the candles are lit. This time, though, we see the ghost girl who was in Paul's room standing in the dining room watching them. Tony runs through quickly, and Mac follows him, panicking. Mac turns to run down in the basement. We see Tony screaming, cornered in the basement at the bottom of the stairs by one of the cloaked figures. The door slams shut in Mac's face. He screams and pounds on the door, but can't get in. He runs upstairs. We see Sarah trying to come down. He tells her to get back up, and the two run upstairs. So they go up in the attic where they find Alex hanging from the ceiling, still alive and struggling. Sarah screams. Mac runs over, tries to help. He tries to help Alex get down, but suddenly cloaked figures are behind him. They close in on him. Sarah screams. The camera spins to the floor, and we see Alex hanging dead. We hear sirens blaring in the distance. We cut back to Sarah in the interview. She tells Diane that she came down the stairs from the attic, and when she got to the front door, the police were arriving, and she was just happy to be alive. Sarah tells them that the police didn't ask her any questions. They just rushed her out. So Diane asks, nothing happened to you on your way out the front door? She tells her no. Diane goes on to ask, if this is all true, how has it been kept from the public for so long? Sarah asks to take a break, saying she's very tired and needs to rest. Diane agrees, and Sarah tells her that she has a room in the hotel already. It's room 2C, and to come find her in a few hours. So they take off the mic, and they break from the interview, and Sarah tells her, you know, you should really try to get inside the house if you can. See what's inside. Diane says, thanks, but it's all boarded up. And she's like, I just can't get a permit. She goes, is that the only thing holding you back? You should really try to see it. Diane says, maybe. She's like, I'll talk to the guys. Thanks. So Sarah leaves the room. Now we cut to Diane and her crew discussing breaking into the hotel and poking around. They decide to do so while one of the guys is going to continue to look through the footage. On their way out, Diane stops at the front desk and tells the clerk that if the woman in 2C comes looking for them, can you tell them we just stepped out for a moment? The clerk tells her that their rooms don't have any letters. Diane looks confused and checks with her crew, saying, Sarah did say 2C, right? And then she asks the clerk, can you just tell me what room Sarah Havel is in? Clerk looks it up and says they have no one by that name staying there. Diane looks confused, but her cameraman tells her she's probably just staying under a different name. And, you know, if they want to go check out the hotel, they should leave now. Diane agrees. So we get a black screen here that says Mitchell stays behind to catalog the footage. What he sees after Diane had left is unexplainable. Now we see found footage from the haunt. We hear Sarah crying while the camera moves through the house. She's obviously the one carrying it. We see more cloaked figures. Eventually, she runs into Paul. She sets the camera down, runs over, and hugs him. He walks away from her, picks up the camera, and begins beating the shit out of her with it. We see, like, he's kicking her and, you know, hitting her with the camera. Then we see blood spattering all up on the walls and around on the camera. Then the footage jumps to, we see Sarah in the car and then back in the haunt where the camera is set down on the ground next to Sarah, who is lying in a pool of blood, gurgling. Paul stands next to her, and we hear something approaching. There's a low, growling breath. Sarah looks up at something off camera. She looks terrified. Suddenly, she's dragged out of frame. So that's where that blood drag came from.
Mm-hmm.
Creepy as hell. And then the camera has a lot of interference, but we see Paul bend down and pick up a broken piece of glass, brings it up out of frame. We hear a tearing sound followed by blood dripping to the floor. Paul falls down along the wall, gurgling and sputtering up as he bleeds from, you know, from the neck wound that he just inflicted on himself. So, yuck, poor Paul, the douchebag.
Poor Paul.
So we hear pounding on the door. Paul dies. The tape ends. We cut to Diane and her cameraman arriving at the Hotel Abaddon. Same footage that we see in the opening of the film.
Which, if you notice, when they get there, it's bright and sunny, even though they left at 5 in the morning.
Exactly. Oh, Lord. So they get there and they begin poking around. They finally get in this time. Now we see dried blood on the floor where Sarah was dragged away. They make their way to the top of the basement stairs. Diane is extremely excited, telling her cameraman to shoot the blood on the wall. And he gets the shot, but quickly says, fuck that, we're not going down there. And I was like, yeah, smart man. Diane agrees not to go in the basement, but wants to continue looking around at the rest of the haunt. She seems way too excited while the cameraman is not enjoying any of this. And she's like, don't be a pussy. He's like, fuck this. Diane's phone goes off. She looks at it and says it's Mitchell. And she's like, oh, I'll call him on our way back. I was like, oh, he's trying to warn you. You're screwed. So they go through the room with the piano and kind of play with the piano once again. So they end up going upstairs and they see room 2C. Diane points it out, looking shocked. The cameraman is telling her no. He's like, there's no way we're going in there. He's like, I'm not here to go into any creepy ass rooms. And she's like, well, I am. She opens the door and we see Sarah sitting on the edge of a bed facing away from them. Diane goes in, calling out to Sarah, asking if she's okay. Sarah turns, you know, her skin looks gray and she's got this giant head wound. Diane and the cameraman scream. They turn to try to escape, but the door closes behind them. They look back. Sarah is standing like right behind him now, flanked by two cloaked figures. The figures rush them. The camera goes staticky and hits the floor. When the image comes back, there's no one else in the room, and we hear the somber piano music playing from downstairs.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yep. Then we get a black screen. We see the image of the Hell House crew standing there like in a Polaroid shot. There's writing on the screen that says, to this day, the tragedy at the Abaddon Hotel remains a mystery to the public. Credits, the end. Dun, dun, dun. But
the end.
Creepy. We've already mentioned pretty much all of the trivia that I took note of, like Joey's eyeball and the puke scene. But apparently the film was actually shot in a real haunted house attraction in Leyden, Pennsylvania. And it was called The Haunting of the Waldorf Hotel. The haunt did take over an abandoned hotel, just like in the movie. So the place they shot this was an actual haunted house, like an attraction, and it actually was built in an abandoned hotel, just like the film, which I found pretty cool.
Creepy.
Indubitably. But so any final thoughts on this here? I think this is our first found footage film. Isn't it?
I think it is.
Yeah. Did we do Blair Witch?
No, we did Blair Witch 2.
Yeah. That was a found footage.
Yeah. I don't think we did any found footage yet. So I think this was our we just popped our found footage cherry. So but yeah, I mean, overall, like I said, I enjoy the flick. I think that it's fun. It's got a lot of glaring problems when you're watching it critically. And it is rife with the found footage problems of why are you still filming? You know, like that's constant throughout. If you can accept that, it's a fun ride. Anybody else have any comments?
No, I like it.
I mean, if you like stuff like that, check it out. You might like it. You might not.
Yeah. Most people that I've talked to either really dig this or just are like, not my cup of tea. And so there doesn't seem to be much middle ground where it's like, yeah, you know, I'd watch it again, but I'm okay with it. You know, it's pretty much, not my bag, or I really dig it. So, but before we get out of here, I guess we will mention our social media as always. We are The Boogeyman's Closet on both Facebook and Instagram. So if you're not following us, check us out there. And Maurice handles our Twitter. And what is that, good sir?
At Boogeyman's the...
Thank you very much. By the time this airs, we will still have a little bit of time before we are drawing the winners of our two October giveaways. Two big old prize packs, so get on there. I have a couple days left from the time this airs to enter. And then in November, we'll be posting a new one, so we still have them going through the end of the year. We have a Patreon, if anyone is interested in that. It's $3 a month for all of our audio content, which includes all of these episodes completely unedited. This one definitely has some long stretches of silence and weirdness as we had some technical difficulties. You know, if you're into that sort of thing, you know, seeing how the sausage is made, that's for you. And you also get a exclusive episode that is only available on Patreon once a month. Unfortunately, I do not know what our next episode will be. We will post it on social media as soon as the votes are tallied. But next month, we are beginning our month of zombie features. So, because we figured, you know, it's Thanksgiving, that's synonymous with feasting, and we already covered cannibal movies, so why not go the undead cannibal route? So, we're going to be covering zombies. As soon as we know our first flick, though, 117, we will post it on social media for those of you that like to watch along before we cover the movie. So, but with that, I guess we will wrap this one up. So, as always, this is Mike saying goodbye.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, follow us on Instagram at The Boogeyman's Closet, where you can stay up to date with everything we have planned.